हरि
Chapter 14, the disappearance of Lord Krishna. Maharaj Yudhishthira said, I think that all these earthly disturbances indicate some greater loss to the good fortune of the world. The world was fortunate to have been marked with the footprints of the lotus feet of the Lord. These signs indicate that this will no longer be. In the 14th chapter, Yudhishthira understands the meaning of the inauspicious signs when he sees that Arjuna arrives in distress. Arjuna's return to Hastinapur is past due, and Maharaj Yudhishthira, after noticing inauspicious signs, reveals to Bhimsena his fears that Lord Krishna, whom the Pandavas completely depend upon, has departed from this earth. Yudhishthira elaborates for Bhimsena the omens he has observed, and concludes that Krishna's footprints will no longer grace this earth. Arjuna suddenly returns from Dwarka, and Yudhishthira, in anxiety, questions him about the welfare of the Yadus. So suddenly, it's not like he's coming and there's all the pomp, and people then say, you know, that the, you know, either the spies or the people at the outer gates, and they make the make the announcement. So Stan, he comes in gradually, slowly, you know, like we see when Krishna enters Dwarka or any of these other things. He just suddenly comes. He just comes straight in. There's no ceremony, anything. Right? So, yeah. Yudhishthira questions turn to the reason for Arjuna's dejected countenance. Yudhishthira concludes that the only possible cause for heroic Arjuna's depression is Lord Krishna's disappearance. Right? Because heroic, because he'll always do everything properly. So if you're doing everything properly, there's no reason to be dejected. No. Right? Even the situations change or not ideal, you're not dejected. Life goes on. Right? But for him to be dejected means there must be something very, a loss of something greatly important. Right? The materialist, they're dejected because they lose material facilities or relationships. Right? But for the devotee, then it's only if there's a loss in spiritual relationships. Because material facility isn't really a problem. Chapter 15. The Pandavas retire timely. Upon hearing of Lord Krishna's returning to his abode, and upon understanding the end of the Yadu dynasty's earthly manifestation, Maharaj Yudhishthira decided to go back home, back to Godhead.
It's nice. Mm-hmm. It's like, just decides.
Yeah. That's what you do, right? Yes.
Back to the other point. How is it possible to lose a spiritual relationship if Krishna is everywhere?
No, you don't lose the relationship, but you lose being with. Just like you're with friends and then they go away. It's not that the relationship's lost, but that direct interaction is not at present.
Okay, so the root of separation.
Yes. In the 15th chapter, hearing the lamentation of Arjuna and seeing the entrance of Kali, The king enthrones his grandson and, giving up the kingdom, marches to death with his brothers. Arjuna, grief-stricken and overwhelmed, his mind fixed on the Lord, reveals to Maharaj Yudhishthira that Sri Krishna, his dear friend, is now lost to him. He recalls incident after incident how Krishna empowered and protected him and the other Pandavas. Arjuna then speaks about the intimacy of his relationship with Krishna and how in the absence of his Lord, he has now lost his powers and was defeated by some insignificant cowherd men. Arjuna relates to Yudhishthira the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. By remembering Krishna's instruction to him, Arjuna becomes situated in transcendence beyond the modes of material nature. So it goes back to the Gita instructions. Right? When there's a difficulty, it goes back to those instructions and everything works nicely.
Isn't he already situated in transcendence?
There's there, but the point is now they're going into that transcendence part where you're not dealing with the world.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If you situate on transcendence, we're engaging everything around you, so you deal with all the social and political and all these elements. Mm-hmm. Then you go to the point where you don't deal with those anymore. So, yeah. But the point of switching is still the Gita.
Yeah.
Right? Through the Gita you engage it, through the Gita you disengage. Right? Yes.
So you're speaking about direct associates of the Lord.
Yes.
That have had that, you know, experience of personal relationship with Krishna.
Yes.
So is what you're talking about only applicable to those people, or is it also possible for us to experience this? Because we've never had this, like, I mean, we had a long time ago, but not here and now, and then Krishna's gone. So is it possible for us to experience that as we remember the, like, as we become unified, or is it not possible for us to experience this spiritual separation?
Means it's possible. Why wouldn't it be possible? Point is we understand the Lord to whatever degree we do, we may miss that. You know what I'm saying? Let's say the boys out in the backyard or out in the front street, they're playing. Right? How much do they know of the personality that they're playing with? Right? One boy on the street, the kid from kitty corner to his, you know, then how much does he know? They just come out, they play, okay, don't make him too upset, or don't take his ball. You know, something they know that much. Okay, how much does his mother know? Okay, so now if it's time for him to go home because it's lunch, then the other boys, then they feel they're losing something. But they don't know as much as the mother does. You understand? Yeah, so that's the difference. Right? So whatever level of your realization, there's going to be some feeling of, you know. Yes, no?
I'm just trying to understand the difference between separation from the Lord and disconnection from the Lord.
Okay, that's your question. See, the other one, you understand? Means we answered your other question, but that wasn't your question.
No, now it's moved on to
you. No, it's not moved on. It's that was your question.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So always stick to the question, because you're going to get an intellectual answer. Right, based on logic and comparing things and all that, showing what's different, what's the same. Okay, so always stick to there. Don't take it from there and go, but anyway, could we feel that? No, but we're such rat bags. We could never do that. So then, how can we? You know, you understand. So in other words, you've had your question. You answer your own question. Then you're just confirming if the answer is correct. But you don't ask your question. You present your answer. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So then that's why it keeps going.
Yeah. I was trying to ask significantly.
No. But all you have to do is say, is there that you, that's the last question you ask, that's your root question.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So stick to the root question. Then, from there, then you can take it into these others. Then it makes sense. There's sort of logic. Otherwise, then it's kind of like we've discussed it, answered it, but it actually had nothing to do with what you were talking about. Right? Does that make sense? And that's for you, because you know all the connections, it works for you, but then for everybody else it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
That's the trick, is stick to what's the actual core question.
Okay.
Yeah? Okay, now what was your core question?
I was trying to understand the difference between separation from Krishna, like on whatever level, like what you're talking about, and disconnection from Krishna.
Disconnection means you don't know Krishna is what you're dealing with. Separation means you do. Right?
But sometimes you can be connected and then everything's okay, and then all of a sudden you get, covered up by the mood or something.
But that's the same thing. If you remember Krishna, then that element of feeling the value or the loss or like this is there. But if you're not, you're just looking at material energy for what you think it is, how you value it, without Krishna, then you won't get that effect.
Okay.
You understand? But when you understand it's what you value, that's Krishna, then you start to get that effect.
Because there's still sadness in both cases, but it's a different flavor of sadness.
Once for a loss of material, once for spiritual. Like that. So one's an illusion, one's not. Does that make sense? They're both the same thing. Like that. By remembering Krishna's instructions to him, Arjuna becomes situated in transcendence, beyond the modes of material nature. After hearing from Arjuna, Yudhishthira and Kunti decide to go back to Godhead. Sutta then philosophically explains the disappearance of the Yadus and the Supreme Lord. Understanding that Kali has entered, Maharaj Yudhishthira enthrones Maharaj Parikit as emperor, frees himself from the material conception of life, and leaves home to devote himself completely to contemplation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right, so this freeing from the material conception. So here it's not that they are seeing anything materially. They're always seeing everything connected to Krishna, but they're freeing themselves from the importance of engaging things here in the Lord's service. Right? Because it's only part of their duty. In the past times, then they do this, so they do that. They're engaged in that way. But if they're not, that's not their duty, then they're not engaged, right? So it will have that element. It mirrors that in the materialist. Materialist is involved in material activities because they have the need for it. They see it as important to them, that it's their duty to do. You know, it really is his duty, you know, to go down there and buy that fancy car. He just really needs it. It's important. You know what I'm saying? So it's the same concept, but the one is not connected to Krishna, the other is. That makes the difference. So the mechanics are the same. If you're going to switch from one side to the other, then it's just a matter of where you're going to see Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's why in the pastimes of the Lord, the devotees are involved in engaging the material energy. The how they engage it is relevant to us. How they give up engaging it is relevant to us. Right? Because we always have to remember, we're people. We're dealing with the Lord's energy. Right? It's not just some mystical element where it's just, you know, there's always the concept that if they're elevated devotees, why would they be involved at all? Or what would be their people? Right? So it's a matter of you're using one thing, you have to switch to another. You know, it's just like you're doing your work and that, and then you go with the family on vacation. You have to adjust to a vacation mode. Right? And then when vacation's over and you go back, you have to readjust with work mode.
You can start to relax again.
Yes. Same old routine. Yeah. Yeah. Same diner. Yeah, okay.
Right.
Yes.
As devotees, we see sometimes we are in need and we want something. Sometimes we do it as for Krishna.
So that need is the mixed part?
Sometimes we do it for Krishna. No, that's not the mixed part. That's the right, that's the right
part. The first one is the mixed part. Sometimes we're in need of something for ourselves. We try to connect it to Krishna back.
Okay, as long as we connect it back, you know, it just depends what's your intent. See, because the element, see, pure devotion is generally considered stable, you know, where it's, because stable is where something starts to work, right? It doesn't mean that it's at its perfection, but it starts to work its stableness, right? You know, it's like when basically you don't fall off your bicycle, then that's considered you're riding your bike. You know, if most of the time you're falling off, then people won't really call that riding your bike. Amusing, but not riding your bike, right? Does that make sense? So that's why typically then you'll take the Madhyama as your standard position of pure devotional service, right? But it's not that the neophyte can't be engaged in pure devotional service. It's just they don't know as much the scripture or things like that, or how to do all the technical connection. But their intent is to please Krishna. So if you have a desire, and then you see, well, to engage that in Krishna's service and do that to please Krishna, then the intent is proper, so it becomes pure devotional service. It may have started from one's own interests, but you convert it into pure devotion. Right? Mixed is when kind of the intent of both is there. You know, you want to please Krishna, but at the same time you want what you want. You understand? You know, it has a life separate than just the service to Krishna. You understand? But the difficulty with it is, if it's service to Krishna, then it's something that can be stable. Does that make sense? But If it's that part that's not connected to Krishna, that's the part that needs the variety. Right? The other one will naturally generate variety because just to bring pleasure to Krishna. But that's adding to something already nice. The other one is you have to generate variety because as soon as it's done, there's no taste. You know what I'm saying? As soon as one goes out and buys that really nice sari because it's Gaur Purnima and you have to wear something special. And as soon as Gaur Purnima is over, then it's gone. You know, then you have to find another festival or another occasion, right? So fortunately, you know, the Sringa Chaturthi, you want to throw it in, like we're talking about Vyas Puja, you know, so, you know, I'll put that on the list, right? Chandra Yatra, then there's 20 days there, yeah, hey, come on. You know, so there's you understand? So there's a difference, but otherwise, if it's dressing nicely for Krishna, then one could dress within that, or one could get something new. But it's not about the newness of that. That's what's going to give the taste. It's just the dressing nicely for Krishna. See, do you understand the difference? Yeah. So the one doesn't run out, and so if you have something new or don't have something new, you do something nice. The other one, it depends upon having something new. And that as soon that newness is only there basically as long as that first 5 minutes, you know, walking to the temple room and everyone noticing. And then after that, then it gets down to your general gossip and then, you know, party's over for the sari, right? You know? Oh, I forgot about the that's the morning. Then what about the abhishek in the evening? Ooh, okay. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, we see from Srimad Bhagavatam that the devotees from engaging to disengaging is a natural process. But we see with ourselves, sometimes it's like back and forth, disengage them, engage it again, and like this. So
yes.
How can we, you know, be more dynamic on this path?
Basically, it's just having that understanding, having that intent, and making the practice. Because it's through practice with the proper attitude that you develop proper habit. And then that proper habit, that will develop value. And then when that comes up, then that will be stable. So in other words, you keep at it. You have to keep at it, you know, intellectually and making that focus and making that specific endeavor that's maybe not coming just automatically until it comes to the point of value. Once it comes to value, then you'll always do it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So Maharaj Yudhishthira enthrones Maharaj Prigat as emperor, frees himself from the material conception of life, and leaves home to devote himself completely to contemplation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because before the material conception, you're engaging the Paramatma and Brahman aspects. You see it back to the Bhagavan, but you always have to go through the steps. So here, disengaging means you just directly deal with the Personality of Godhead. After describing how the Pandavas followed Yudhishthira, and after describing the departure of Vidura, the chapter ends with the benediction. Right? So Yudhishthira's going whether his brothers come or not. He's made that decision. They want to come, it's not a problem. But it's not that he's only going to go if they go, or he's going to sit there and try to convince them. He's just going to walk out. And then if they want to do the, they just have to run and catch up. Right? You know, so everybody has to individually make their decision. That's the whole point. Chapter 16, How Prigat Received the Age of Kali. Once, when Maharaj Prigat was on his way to conquer the world, he saw the master of Kali Yuga, who was lower than a shudra, disguised as a king, and hurting the legs of a cow and bull. The king at once caught hold of him to deal sufficient punishment. 16th chapter describes the victory tour of Prigat, the question by Dharma to the earth, and earth's lamentation about the separation from Krishna. Suta Goswami explains that once, as Maharaj Prigat was reigning under the guidance of the Brahmanas, he punished the master of Kali Yuga, who was causing pain to a cow and a bull. Right. Yeah, so we see, what's it? Like Vena, he's not working under the control of the Brahmins or the guidance of the Brahmins, and he's making trouble. He's not performing religious acts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sri Shanaka Rishi inquires about the punishment of Kali, and he explains the glories of hearing about topics related to Krishna. Sutra relates that after Maharaj Prigat receives the influence of the age of Kali within his kingdom, he initiates a tour to defeat Kali. Right, so he's given him places to stay, then he goes around his kingdom to make sure there are no such places. You know, it's like you say, you could stay in any house that's blue, sky blue, and then he goes around and makes sure they're all repainted. While touring, Maharaj Prigat hears the glories of his great relatives, the Pandavas. Dharma, who is wandering in the form of a bull. Dharma, who is wandering in the form of a bull, questions the earth in the form of a cow because the cause of the earth's current miserable condition. Earth applies that her misery is caused by her separation from Krishna's presence. By the increase of Kali's influence due to Krishna's absence, Maharaj Prigat then arrives. Because otherwise you see in the 11th canto that the earth, Bhumi, is mentioning about all these great materialistic administrators and how they're trying to conquer the world, right? So she's talking about this, you know, it's being referred to by Krishna in the Uddhava Gita. So then when that's taking place, it's before. So this is a constant thing that goes on. Everybody's trying to become the emperor and conquer. Jarasandha's trying, Kamsa's trying, you know, Yayata, everybody's trying. So she's just laughing about it. So it's not that all these different things would be a disturbance for her. It's just that time. It's that time of the day, week, month, year. You know, it's just, you know, it's, oh, okay, here it comes again. Right? You know, okay, it's taxes. Okay, here it comes again. You know, it's just the way it works. So it's not a problem. So her real problem is Krishna's left. That's the problem. So we see is the Pandavas' problem is Krishna's left, Bhumi's problem is Krishna's left, right? Kali's, you know, happiness is Krishna's left. Okay, now party's on, right? Chapter 17, Punishment and Reward of Kali. Maharaj Prigat, who could fight 1,000 enemies single-handedly, thus pacified the personality of religion and the earth. Then he took up a sharp sword to kill the personality of Kali, who is the cause of all irreligion. In the 17th chapter, the questions and answers between Prigat and Dharma and the punishment and mercy received by Kali are described. Maharaj Prigat challenges and threatens the low-class man, dressed as a king, who is beating the cow and the bull. Maharaj Prigat then questions and consoles the cow and bull. The bull answers Maharaj's inquiries about the cause of his distress. After hearing the bull's reply, Maharaj Parikshit recognizes the bull to be the personality of religion, Dharma, and begins to answer him with words full of respect. Maharaj Parikshit, upon concluding his reply to Dharma, prepares to kill Kali. But Kali submissively bows down and surrenders to the king. Kali's making trouble because that's what he's supposed to do. Right? Why is he doing it? Because that's what people want. Right? The living entity gets to a point in consciousness that they want the environment of Kali Yuga. That's why it's there. It's the smallest. It's 1/10 of the whole time. Right? So we see 1/10 people like it to be basically irreligious. Right? 2 out of 10, it's pretty much religious. Right? 3 out of 10, want it religious. 4 out of 10, it's basically even beyond religion, it's so good. Right? So we see the prominence is religious. 1/10 only, it's a small amount. But so it's his business to do. So he works under authority. It's not that he doesn't have Kali does not have authority issues. Right? It's not his problem. Right? So he's working under authority. So he sees, here's authority. He understands the king's authority, and he understands he has that power. He was a regular king. Who's going to be able to kill a demigod? But this one, he has power. He has piety. Because we see some kings are able to go up to the heavenly planets, move with the demigods, and fight on their behalf. He's one such king. So you don't mess with these ones. Other ones, he might use his tricky, clever discussions, like he did with Adama, right? So he was able to get him to be distracted from his princely duties, right? And take up the religious path. But here, Maharaj Parikshit's not going to buy that one. Right? Plus, you know, there's no apple trees around, so hey, it worked. Okay. But Kali submissively bows down and surrenders to the king. Maharaj Parikshit spares Kali's life and orders his banishment. Kali requests a place where he can live according to his nature, without fear. Because that's protection, is what everybody has. And seeing that he has the whole of what is earth, the Punya Bhumi, plus other sections that we can't even see. You know, where the Kinnaras live and all those other aspects. So that doesn't leave any place for him, because Kali Yuga, he himself does not influence specifically the demigods in that. He influences those here in Punya Bhumi, because it's here that you generate the benefit of the universe. So the rest of the universe is affected by Kali Yuga, but not directly, it's indirectly, because people don't do yagyas, they don't do sacrifice. That means things get a little bit sparse on the heavenly planets, right? So you gotta tighten your solid gold waistband, you know. Yes. Maharaj Parikshit gives Kali permission to dwell in 5 places, where gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter take place, and where gold is hoarded. Genuine Brahmins and sannyasis should never come in contact with such places. After Maharaj Parikshit sends Kali away, he reestablishes the principles of religion. Chapter 18. Maharaj Parikshit, so you see, that's why he says real. Because then one can say, well, Brahmins and sannyasis wouldn't, but there is that element. We see so much materialistic Brahmins, they're always mentioned, the stories come up in Shastra. You know, that. Let's say the king gives the Brahmin so much land or so much villages so that he gets the tax from that. Instead of that tax from that village or that area coming to the king, right, going to the tax collector and then going to the king, it goes directly to the Brahmin. And then he can run. He has a large goshala, he runs a gurukul, he does big yagyas, he does something that the king is supporting. Okay, now he's using it, so he's a real Brahmin. So he's not actually into hoarding gold and all these different things. But now let's say a couple of generations down the line and they're not following these things anymore. Now the Brahmin is just a zamindar, a landowner. So now he busies himself maintaining his holdings and seeing that his tax comes in. This is what we mean by real Brahmins wouldn't do this. So now he's still a Brahmin. He's still maybe practicing, doing his puja. But it's not the real mentality of a Brahmin. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Because ashram dharma is the varna dharma of a Brahmin. But as soon as you get into these other aspects, then you're dealing with these other varnas, but not for the support of ashram dharma, that it's itself your varna. You understand? Yes. Subtle. Yes. But, yeah. Yes.
So it seems that Kali and Maya, they have a similar function.
Maya just presents what it is that you want, have wanted, or like that. In other words, what desire seeds are there, then those environments are there. Kali himself kind of tries to make the facilities of what you're interested in of a lower nature. But in other words, like we hear in the Bhagavatam about, you know, they're talking about the gross materialist, right? The forest of material enjoyment that comes up, you know, many times. And so we're talking about the example being given generally of the person who's most absorbed is that pious man who's following the injunctions of the Veda, and he's waiting for, according to the astrological recommendations of the Shastra, when his wife is going to be ready for sexual interaction, and, you know, and the performance of Garbhodan Samskar. Right? They're taking that as the gross materials. So whether they're engrossed like that, or whether the guy's just somebody off the street, you know, and after, you know, dealing appropriately with, you know, the guys on the next block plus another two or three mushrooms, then he goes home to see his girl, and then, you know, the same thing is going on. You understand? But one is the influence of Kali that it's fallen into that nature. Does that make sense? Because you're always going to have the low class mentality in every age. You're always going to have tribals. They're always there. It's not that a tribal doesn't mind nice stuff. It's just like this. Okay, let us take where on the planet, let's say you're going for a vacation, okay? Then you think about places that the weather is very nice, right? It's very green, nice air. Generally, there's water around, right? Nice fruits, nice vegetables, nice, you know, all this nice, fresh, organic, and all that, okay? Now, in those places where those are abundant and normal, whose place actually is it? Who's the natural inhabitants of that place? Tribals. Right? So in other words, they're not stupid. Right? They know is that, you know, there's this line called, you know, the tropics, and they stay inside those. Right? You know, you go the other side, not so good. Stay inside, good. Yeah. Okay? So they're in that band there. And so it's not that tribals have a problem with great weather and nice food and, you know, an easy life. You know what I'm saying? It's the Westerners who love to move up north where it's freezing cold. You know, penguins would think it's great, but, you know, hey, you know, other than penguins and polar bears, then, you know, then there's Svalbard. Yeah. So the whole point is, it's not that it's Satya Yuga that tribals won't mind it. Yeah. You know, it just makes it easier for them. But the mentality is Kali Yuga, hey, it works. You know, but they'll still find the best in Kali Yuga.
Right. So Maharaj, Maya is more sophisticated and Kali more coarse?
Maya is more sophisticated, Kali is more coarse, basically, from what we see. You know, because he apparently dresses up, you know, it's obvious that here's a Shudra dressed up as a king. And the activities he's doing is obvious. Maya is so subtle.
Yes.
You know, like that. You know, here's Maya. you know, standing in front of the deities, my dear Lord, you know, please, you know, accept me as your pure devotee, engage me in your devotional service as a tap on the shoulder. Hey, Prabhu, can you come and assist? Hey, I'm busy right now. And going back to, that's Maya. She's good. So it doesn't matter whichever age you want to function in, she knows what to do, right? Because she's all it is the modes get lower as it goes. So what modes you want to work under, but who controls the modes are Maya. Kali doesn't control the modes, right? Okay, yes.
I have a question regarding this hoarding gold, how to understand it.
Hoarding gold.
Yes, in every time, because we don't see so much people hoarding gold today. They maybe hoard money or digital currency.
What's the difference?
Yeah, that's my question. Is it by gold they mean like money? Or
gold means wealth. It means gold. It has to go back to gold at some point, because that's the way God made it. So countries have gold because it has to go back to there. Their currency, their money is as strong as how much gold they have or how good they are in international meetings. You understand? But if you adjust it, then there won't be much. You understand? So it still goes back to gold. Yes? No?
Okay.
Yeah. Chapter 18. Maharsh Parikit cursed by a Brahmin boy. Maharsh Parikit was always conscientiously surrendered to the personality of Godhead, and therefore he was neither afraid nor overwhelmed by fear due to a snake bird, which was to bite him because of the fear of the Brahmin boy. So neither afraid nor overwhelmed. Right? He wasn't afraid, nor was he disturbed. Right? Because it's not a matter of loss or, don't know what's going to happen. You know, so there wasn't the intellectual or the emotional or the physical considerations like this. It's just, you know, it's just fact.
Mark, can we say that this part of his was his Kshatriya nature?
No, this is because of the Vaishnava nature, where he builds himself a fort on a pedestal with one door. That's the Kshatriya nature. Like that. This is because he's a devotee. After leaving all his associates, the king surrendered himself as a disciple to the son of Vyas, Sukadev Goswami, and thus he was able to understand the actual position of the personality of Godhead. In the 18th chapter, the king repents after placing a snake around the neck of the sage and hears the curse of the sage's son. Sudha Goswami begins by describing Maharsh Parikit's life, which contains wonderful dealings with Krishna. Sutta leaves no doubt that Parikit was powerful enough to conquer over and fully subdue Kali. Yet the king understood realistically that the coming of the age of quarrel was due, since Lord Krishna had departed the earth. Because it's just there's a natural cycle. Now if people take up devotional service, if Krishna's there, in other words, if you connect it with Krishna, then Kali Yuga doesn't have that power. Because Kali Yuga only has power over materialists, not over devotees. Right, so that we take part in it is because of our agreeing to take part, basically. We'll say we don't want to take part. You know, it's just like the scary movie. No, I don't want to watch. You know, what's it, like that. You know, so that's the whole point, is that we if Krishna's there, then he's not, he pulls back. So if Krishna's present, then Kali Yuga is not going to have effect. It's his age. You know, he's the host, but still, Krishna is the prominence. And then with Parikit Maharaj there as the devotee, it has the same effect. But now he can see as the way things are working, that now it's time for Kali's, you know, age to start. It has to start at some point. And so he can see as by the arrangement, this is then what's happening. So then he just leaves it. Otherwise, he could have counted the curse and all that, but he could see as it's Krishna's arrangement. Yet the king understood realistically that the coming of the age of Kaur was due, since Lord Krishna had departed the earth. He also understood that the self-controlled had nothing to fear from Kali's influence, Still, as king, it was his duty to protect the foolish and careless from that influence. Just like here. Let's say you're starving hungry. Okay? Then I come along with a bucket of, you know, we cut the vegetables yesterday and all the peels and scraps and other parts and, you know, this and that. That was yesterday. And it was a hot day yesterday. And so now I have them in a bucket. And I'm walking out to throw them in the compost pile. Are you going to be running after me?
No.
No. Okay. You know, what if, you know, it's already composted? You know, are you going to be running? You understand? No. So that's the point. The self-control, there's nothing to fear because Kali doesn't have anything of value to offer.
Yes.
Right? In other words, those who are connected with Krishna, they don't have any value in the breaking of the regulative principles. Right? They don't means you don't hoard gold for yourself. Prabhupada says you get stuff. You know, you get $1 million in the morning. By the evening, you're a pauper because you've spent it all on Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? It doesn't mean you're out on the street. But the point is now Krishna has facility. Not, it means the money was yours. You used it for Krishna.
Ferrari, so you can get to the temple real fast.
Yeah, as long as there's a good road between. You know, if you're going through the older parts of Rome, I wouldn't suggest it. And that's an interesting point. The cars made by the Italians who have, you know, these roads that you don't want to use such cars on.
That's actually
interesting, no?
That's actually,
you know, you want to use it on the German roads.
That's true. They have all the safe cars.
Huh?
The Germans have all the safe cars.
Because they have roads you can do. You have a car that can do 300 kilometers an hour, but you can't do more than 50 because of the roads. So therefore, you don't have to worry about safety. Germans have cars you can go 300 on, but so therefore. Yeah. Okay. Still, as king, right, means the self-control and nothing to fear from Kali's influence, right? So the real Brahmins and sannyasis, Prabhupada talked about it. Still, as king, it was his duty to protect the foolish and careless from that influence.
Yes.
Right? Because those who are foolish and careless, they don't see the importance, they don't see the danger. Like little kids don't see the danger in the flame. Mm-hmm. So that's foolish and careless. So you have to protect.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. But the real Brahmins, they don't have a problem because they see it, they understand it according to Krishna consciousness. So they're either functioning on the platform of sannyas or renunciation. Right? And so either platform. So the Brahman on the platform of sannyas, now that's the best. That's the most solid. But on renunciation, it still works because it's ultimately going to be connected to Krishna. So they don't have any problem. But those who don't do that, in other words, they don't understand the Brahminical platform. And therefore, they don't mind dealing with the material energy on the material energy's terms. Right? So they have to be protected from that. The sages glorify Sutta and the importance of hearing about Krishna from great devotees. They then request, so that's why you always follow in the footsteps of the acharyas. The acharyas say something instead of doubting it. You know, you want to support that because you should hear from them. What's the point of hearing from us? Right? It means we're all here discussing because we're discussing what the acharyas are saying. That's the value. Discussing what we think, you know, that's not so important. Right? Does that make sense? Like that, yeah. They then request Sutta to describe the pastimes of the Lord, especially the topics upon which Maharaj Purukit fixed his mind, right, because he attained perfection, and by such consciousness attained Krishna's lotus feet. So, something works, follow that. Right? Why can't try to come up with something new? Do we hear of anybody using non-Vedic things and becoming Krishna conscious?
No.
Very, you know, basically no. Right? Yes.
I think Vishwamitra tried that one.
Meaning?
He tried to grow people on the tree. He tried his own
work. Oh, okay, yeah. But then, you know, it didn't work out. It was a good attempt, that one. You know, so yeah, innovative, and Krishna respected the attempt, so he gave blessings. But you know, yeah. I mean, it definitely would make things a lot easier. You know? Go out with your basket, pick a few kids. You
know? It's coming.
Huh?
It's coming.
Yeah, yeah. Sutta first explains the process of purification through hearing about Krishna, right? You'll be purified by hearing. Then you'll get the taste, right? Then you'll get that attachment. So the neophyte position is basically that of getting purified. Purification continues all the way through, of course, to prema, but that's the prominence. Then we start to get that taste in the Madhyama platform. Then that taste then matures into attachment. Right, and then that attachment matures into prema.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So the hearing process is exactly the same. Hearing from the association of the advanced devotees. So it doesn't change. Even on prema, then that's all one does.
Yes.
He then relates Krishna's exalted qualities. Because those are what the basis of everything is. Because Krishna says, whatever is of value in this world, know that to be Him. So those are Krishna's qualities. We just see the qualities not connected to Krishna and value it in its particular form and activities that are a reflection of the internal potency. Does that make sense? So therefore it's Maya. Right? Krishna has a quality. How is that manifest? Prabhupada says, Krishna manifests through His internal potency. So what do we see manifest? His quality. What is that manifestation we appreciate? The form and activities that He performs, that quality is to be able to be appreciated. Does that make sense? Right? So then, what happens? That becomes reflected in the material world. We still are seeing the quality. We still, those forms and activities that manifest that quality, we just don't see Krishna as the owner of the quality. You understand? And we don't see the forms and activities connected to Krishna. So we're still, it's all about the quality. So once you've established the principle of the importance of Krishna Katha, the next thing is Krishna's qualities. Because that's what we work from. Everything we work from, qualities. Right? You know, it's just like, you know, how you say? You know, one goes out in the morning, right? In these places beyond the tropics. Right? And, you know, if you're from within the tropics, then you go out and you go, ooh, it's cold, means there's the lack of the warmth. And you're thinking warm, comfortable, you know, that kind of element of shelter. And the guy next to you, you know, so you have this kind of grumbly look, and the guy next to you has this pleasant look on his face, and he takes a deep breath and goes, fresh. You understand? So what's going on here? Right? Yeah. It's still about qualities. Right? So for one, then the form of cold, and the activities that go along with it, like wearing 5 kilos of clothes,
yeah,
right? Then is an element of considered good because it's fresh, that newness, that pleasantness, because each morning is colder than the other one. So it's new, it's different. Does that make sense? Well, the other, you're looking for that warmth, and so that's Krishna. You understand? You know, the warmth of the sun and that. But at the same time is when you're in that fresh situation, the sun does come out and gets a little warm, but it's not too warm, you know, still within the low 20s. Then, you know, then it's, that's also nice. Then it's appreciated.
Low 20s, that's like high summer.
Yeah. But that's where human life begins over here.
My mom wrote me, she was very elated. It was +1 degree. This is great.
Yeah, tell me she's got another 22 degrees to go. Yes.
So, qualities that are perceived by us as negative, they're not Krishna?
No, everything's Krishna. The problem is we don't see it as Krishna. We see it as, we see the form and the activities connected with that form that's in relation to that quality on their own. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I just said that because in the nature of devotion, it releases the qualities of Krishna, but they're mostly good qualities.
They're superior qualities. Krishna is the superior qualities, but if you don't have the superior quality...
Okay, so all qualities.
All qualities. It means, in other words, darkness means lack of light. Darkness isn't a separate entity. Darkness can't go around and where there's light go and then the lights go out. It makes good copy, you know, but it doesn't actually happen. You understand? Yeah. So that's the whole point. Because then that's the point, is that I'm doing bad things because there's a power that's stronger than good and has overwhelming good. Then I'm still an okay bloke. What can I do? Bad functions on its own. The devil takes over God's kingdom and manages it and runs it how he likes, and God can do nothing about it. You know what I'm saying? Because then I'm not a bad person. You know, unfortunate, you know, maybe a little weak, you know, like that, but I'm not a bad person. Right? So, you know, you still love your mother, so then, you know, still he can, you know, even though he's going to find himself in the electric chair for, you know, robbing, you know, about 250 too many banks. But, you know, he's going to, but, you know, because he loved his mother, then definitely there's a spot for him in heaven. Because we're not, does that make sense? Because the soul's natural position of ananda, and ananda comes from results, which comes from proper activity. So the soul doesn't actually relate to activities not being proper. That's why whatever one's doing by one's conditioning, one thinks it's proper. That's why one has to learn what is proper. Otherwise, we'll take it by the ignorance of the soul that anything we do is proper. Because the soul doesn't actually relate to the material world. We deal with the material world as if it's the spiritual world. We think it's eternal. It will give us happiness. These are qualities of the spiritual world, not the material world. The material world is temporary and full of misery. That's just reality.
So these negative qualities, they go under the banner of material energy, like external energy?
Yeah, they're just the lack of the good ones. That's all we're saying. Bad qualities are just lack of good. He's proud. What does it mean? He's not humble. Humble is the superior quality. You lack humility, then there's pride. Right? Tolerance, intolerance. You know, so most of them, it just has a different, it's the same thing. Atheist. It's just like that. But then some of them are more prominent, then they have their own term. Does that make sense? Yeah. One thing is, how is it that if he's the Lord of Darkness, why is he red?
Yeah.
Because he's angry.
Envious. You think
angry.
He'd be
angry.
You think he'd be green?
Yeah.
Envy.
Yeah. Envy? What do you say?
Anger.
No, but in Bhagavatam they say
anger. Oh, okay. Then that works. But why is he angry? It's going good. Life's good.
Yeah, so he's become
very fiery.
Fiery? Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Fire would be life.
Huh? Fire
would be life.
Yeah.
More emphasis on the painful nature of being burned.
Okay. Dark light.
Dark light.
Yeah, now that can get even better copy. Right? Yeah. The Lord of Dark Light. Yes.
Maharaj, could you maybe a little explain what is the Vaishnava view to the conspiracy theories which relates to Kali Yuga, but seems to have a certain kind of an emphasis which is made, like, difference. So,
conspiracy. Means conspiracy theories are popular because they bring out the taste of fear. So eating, sleeping, mating, and defending are fearing. Because then you're not in control, you don't know what will happen, there's no security. So that's the taste. Because conspiracy theories, it's not about facts, it's about the taste you get from them. Because even if the government is running everything and you don't know about it, that's the way governments work. That's just how they have to work. Because if everybody knows everything, the next government will come and take over. So you have to be able to run it where people don't know what's going on. Right? Certain elements you have to know, certain concepts you need to know. And whatever is going to... anything that is connected with national security, then nobody, the fewer people that know, the better. Like that. That's just the way governance works, just like business. How much should people know about where you got your goods, how much you paid for them, you know, like that. It's you're running your store, right? And you're selling it for a good markup. People are buying it. What they don't know is if they go to the next block, but not from the front, but go around the back in the alley, there's a door there into a warehouse where you bought your stuff cheap. Do you tell people that that's where you get it? No, you can't. You know, so therefore it's not good. It means do you tell that, okay, it's the anniversary. You totally forgot about it, but you were smart enough to make an arrangement with the florist about the date and everything that they would deliver the flowers. So when the flowers show up, you know, then the wife is very happy and says, oh, you remembered. Does he say, well, actually, I forgot, and it was only because they'd done this and they sent it, but I was actually going to do something. Do you say that? You just smile. You understand? So this whole idea is that, you know, that everything has to be known and you have the right to know, like that. But they only want the right to know so that they can be more in fear, because the more they know, it's not the more they become enlightened or the more they become stable, the more they become fearful. So the whole purpose of the right to know is purely sense gratificatory. It's not actually, it's not knowledge and enlightenment. So there's these, so... basically, we don't have anything to do with conspiracy theories. Even if they're facts, who cares? You know what I'm saying? So what, the helicopter is unmarked. Does it fly differently? You know, something like that. Is that going to make the difference? You know, the government puts, you know, their logo on it and then comes, pops up out of somewhere and then, you know, blows you up. Or it's black and without anything and they pop up and blow you up. What does it matter? You know, like that. That's the thing, is it doesn't matter, you know. Even if there are, you know, there's an alien guy sitting there in Area 51 and he loves smoking cigarettes, who cares? You know, it means, are they going to get into what brand he's into smoking? Has anybody ever asked that? What brand does he smoke? Does he smoke filtered or unfiltered? What about menthol? You know, is he on that because they're on a budget? Why isn't he smoking Havana cigars? You know, or if they're a little rough, at least Tipperillos. You know, and you say, well, you know, what's going on here? You know, why that? What about hand rolled? You know, it means that, you know, if you're, you know, in America and in that part of America, they hand roll their cigarettes. So why isn't he hand rolling a cigarette? You know, so, but nobody asks about that. It's only enough so you can create more fear. Because as soon as you get into that kind of detail, then it removes some of the fear, because he's just an ordinary bloke. But they don't want to know about that. You know, they want to maintain the fear element. Because as soon as you show something that their theory won't work in this, they immediately switch to a different conspiracy theory. You know, Area 51, and you get rid of that, and then it's about, oh, well, what about the, you know, 3-foot-tall guys in Zurich, you know, who wear pinstripe suits, you know, that run the whole world, you know, like that. You know, and then it just goes on and on and on, you know, like that. And then you have the lizards, right? You know?
One of the better ones.
Yeah. Why lizards, you know? Oh well, whatever. They're popular.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
So in other words, we don't care. Even if they're a fact, who cares? You know? We just really don't care. You know? You know, it's just like this. The government makes the street a one-way street. So they're actually restricting your options, you know. So now we're getting into, oh, you know, it's like that. Are they going to control everything? And then pretty soon they're going to make rules on, you know, which way you go through your house and like that. We're going to have to put 2 doors on our bathroom because you can only go in one and out the other. You know, it's a, you know, they're going to get. No, it's just like, that's all it's for. Like that. There always is restriction. You can't have human society without restriction. Right? There can't be without control. Like that. So then, what to do? Okay. Prigat for. Okay. Next sutta tells how Maharaj Prigat insulted Samiki Rishi by placing a dead snake around the meditating sage's neck. After discovering this insult to his father, the Brahmin son Sringi cursed Maharaj Prigat to die in 7 days, even though his father dismissed the insult as minor. Right? He's a transcendentalist. Who cares about a dead snake? Right? If it had been a live snake, now you know we might have something to discuss, but it was dead. When he came to know the vengeful act of his offspring, Samyaka Rishi lamented. Samyaka Rishi prayed to the Supreme Lord to forgive Sringi for his foolishness. Right? He lamented because now an ideal situation of how everybody's nicely protected will be lost. Because in a safe situation, it's so much easier to be God-conscious, right, for your general populace. Right? So the sannyasis, the Brahmins, they don't get so distracted by it. But your general populace does because they are foolish and careless. So the better the situation, the easier it is for them to be God-conscious. Right? And then Sringi for his foolishness, because the point is that somebody does something wrong because of foolishness. So this is another example of the principle of that. For those who create the problem, you're forgiving them, like Haridas Thakur. Right? Here's an example that's happening to someone else, but it's going to come back on them. He's able to sit and do his meditation, his ashram, because it's a safe place. Right? That will be lost. Right? But Haridas Thakur, they're directly beating him. But he's just thinking that they don't understand what they're getting involved in. Yes?
You say the better the situation, the easier to be thinking of God. But then yes. Queen Kunsi is saying that all these calamities keep happening because
she's in that position of, you know, high-grade Brahmins and sannyasis.
So that's the distinction that...
Means... then you know that you will automatically think that way. But the point is you get some that if the situation's not nice... why does community work or not work? It basically comes down to how well it goes. Somebody moves to a community, they heard about it, they think it's great, they're there for, you know, some months or some years, and then they find out it doesn't work out exactly the way they thought ideal community should be, and then they leave. But and in doing that, it may affect their Krishna consciousness. Oh, the devotee's this, the devotee's that. And then it's got to go back to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, rather than this is the conditioning you're associating with.
Yes.
Right? So conditioning is conditioning. It doesn't matter where you are.
Yes, so it's the inability to distinguish.
Yes, so that's therefore foolish.
Yes.
And careless. Yeah.
If you played like that, saying that, because when we see these things, we see your Lord and you protect us when we get the protection.
Yeah.
Opportunity to remember that.
Yes. Yeah. So it should go that way. You know, but if you think the material world should be great,
yeah.
You know, because I've done something, and so therefore the results should come in and like that, then there's always going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. Chapter 19. The appearance of Sukadeva Goswami. At that moment, there appeared the powerful son of Vyas, who traveled over the earth disinterested and satisfied with himself. He did not manifest any symptoms of belonging to any social order or status of life. Here he's disinterested and satisfied, so these are opposing qualities. And this is just the Brahman platform. So Brahman, being all the qualities of Krishna, will also have this, you know, achintya element of how the conceivability of how all these contradictory elements are there. So all these things are there. Like Paramatma, he's controlling everything, involved in everything, not a blade of grass moves, but he has no interest. Like that. He did not manifest any symptoms of belonging to any social order or status of life. Maharaj Prigat bowed his head to receive the chief guest. Receiving respect from all, Sukadeva Goswami took his exalted seat. In the 19th chapter, Maharaj Prigat repents for his act. renounces the kingdom, vows to fast until death, and Sukadeva arrives in the assembly of great sages. Maharaj Parikshit laments that he insulted the sage, because it probably mentions the devotee automatically thinks that something's gone, you know, he's done something wrong, that it was improper. When the king is informed he's been cursed for his offense, he makes preparations for his death. Fasting, he sits down at the bank of the Ganges and gives himself up to the lotus feet of the Lord. After hearing of the king's plight, many rishis arrive. Maharaj Parikshit welcomes them and tells them of his decision to fast until death. The sages glorify the king's decision, and Maharaj Parikshit responds by inquiring from the sages about the duty of one who is about to die. Immediately after Maharaj Parikshit submits his sincere inquiry before the lotus feet of the august assembly, the exalted sages at once rise to honor the arrival of Srila Sukadeva Goswami. Approaching the assembly, accompanied by a crowd of gawky ignoramuses, the young and beautiful Sukadeva seem unconcerned with social conventions. Yet he exhibits the auspicious personal symptoms of an extraordinary personality. Indeed, his appearance reminded the learned persons present of Lord Krishna himself. Maharaj Parikshit offers him respect, glorifies him, and then inquires about the duty of one about to die. So that ends the chapter. Which of these two is the Vishwanath, the one in bold, or the sentence afterwards? Okay. The verse itself. Okay. So it would go bad. Interesting. Just reading those ones. Because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he's giving a summary of each chapter in this one sentence, two sentences. Oh, there isn't one for chapter one? No. Okay, so chapter two. In the second chapter, there's the description of three items, the process of abhideya, bhakti, the goal, prayojana, prema, and the object of worship, the supreme Bhagavan Krishna. In the third chapter, Sutta Goswami's answer to the sage's request to describe the various avatars. This chapter explains that the Lord in one form alone makes his appearances and performs activities. One form, there's not more than one form. These are different specialities of one form. Fourth chapter declares the excellence of the speaker and the hearer of the Bhagavatam. In the fifth chapter, showing the futility of jnana and karma, Narada teaches Vyasa about bhakti with its chief component, kirtana. In the sixth chapter, Narada describes how he went to the forest to seek the Lord, and hearing his words, later received a spiritual body. In the seventh chapter, Vyasa sees the meaning of all scriptures while in trance. The withdrawal of the Brahmastra and the punishment of Ashwatthama are also told. In the eighth chapter describes how Krishna protected Parikshit from the Brahmastra, Queen Kunti's prayers to Krishna, and Maharaj Yudhishthira's lamentation. In the ninth chapter, Bhishma Dev imparts instructions to King Yudhishthira on the subject of occupational duties and offers his last prayer to the Lord. In the tenth chapter describes how Krishna, after enthroning the Pandavas in the kingdom without obstacles, leaves for Dwarka and was praised by the Yadavas. In the 11th chapter, Krishna, arriving at Dwarka, is praised by the inhabitants. He then meets with his friends and satisfies his wives. In the 12th chapter, describes how Maharaj Yudhishthira celebrated the birth of Parikshit and heard of his future life from the Brahmanas. No one had ever heard of such a devotional king who saw Krishna when he was in the womb and punished Kali. The 13th chapter describes the arrival of Vidura, Dhritarashtra's leaving the palace on the instruction of Vidura, and Narada's instructions to allay the lamentation of Yudhishthira. In the 14th chapter, Yudhishthira understands the meaning of the inauspicious signs when he sees that Arjuna arrives in distress. In the 15th chapter, hearing the lamentation of Arjuna and seeing the entrance of Kali, the king enthrones his grandson and, giving up the kingdom, marches to death with his brothers. The 16th chapter describes the victory tour of Parikshit, the question of Dharma to the earth, and Earth's lamentation about her separation from Krishna. In the 17th chapter, the questions and answers between Parikshit and Dharma and the punishment and mercy received by Kali are described. In the 18th chapter, the king repents after placing a snake around the neck of the sage and hears the curse of the sage's son. In the 19th chapter, Maharaj Parikshit repents for his act, renounces his kingdom and fasts, vows to fast until death, and Sukadeva arrives in the assembly of great sages. So you see here this element when we just go through just these, this aspect of the devotees, you know, understanding the situation, the material world, engaging that situation, but at some point giving it up. Right? Mm-hmm. Krishna sees that, you know, Yudhishthira's enthroned, everything's there, then he leaves. Then Yudhishthira, then seeing the approach of Kali, then he enthrones Parikshit, and then he leaves. Then Parikshit seeing that Kali's time is here, and that then he leaves. Right? So it just, you know, it just keeps on. It's just, that's the way it works. And so it's always about, the important element is Krishna. Because whatever's here is temporary, it will be left. Was yesterday something? And Krishna's saying the last shirt you wear has no pockets.
Yeah.
So Maharaj,
Saita.
It didn't specify.
Yes.
Actually, when we read the Bhagavatam and other scripture, who made this distinction between the different chapters? How it's coming on?
That's Vyasadeva.
Vyasadeva.
Yeah, because that's how it's compiled. So he puts it together and makes it.
Okay, and he gave a name for the eighth chapter?
Yeah. No, these are probably those ones you see in quotes. Those are taken from Acharyas and things like that. So all these things are just coming in parampara. No one adds anything. They show their realizations, but the structure. That's why we always stick to the structures used by the Acharyas. Yes. That's the point of these courses. That the Acharyas have already done these studies and that. We don't have to create. We just have to compile them.
Yes.
You know, like that. Vyasadeva doesn't create scripture; he compiles it. So we don't have to create purports. We have to compile them. That's all. Does that make sense? That's the problem. The modern you create.
Yes.
Here it's just you just follow what the Acharyas have given. You know, be aware enough to notice what they've given, the structure. Like it says right there, it says, second chapter, you know, Vishwanath says it's about Abhideya, Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana.
Yes.
So that's how you study it. So we see is that. That's because Jiva Goswami, he's defined the whole thing according to that. So then that study of it according to those three, that's the natural form. You know, so the Sandarbhas are the full study. But we have these other studies to bring out these essence. So we're using those here because we're only dealing with half of the Bhagavatam. Right, when we deal with the second half, then we take those scriptures and the Sandarbhas that deals with the whole Bhagavatam, the Vedanta Sutra. Right now we deal with that which gives the essence. So we're looking for this essence of the uniqueness of bhakti over all of the processes, and the uniqueness of the devotee, and the uniqueness of the spirit of the spiritual realm. You know, a Braj over all other realms. You know, these are the essence that they're bringing out. That hearing about the Lord and the association of advanced devotees. Right, and that hearing means about the qualities of the Lord, you know, his pastimes, these aspects like that. That's what's important, right? So pure devotion is what's important. And these other things, engaging the conditioning, that's just what you do, right? You know, it's like if you someone who is a good cook. They go into the kitchen, they just automatically look for pots, they look for ingredients, they prepare the things, they make sure everything's there, they do whatever needs to be done to get it done. But that's not where their focus is. Their focus is on the cooking and who you're cooking for and what is going to be the results of that cooking. Right? Because in other words, you're cooking for a particular audience, right? So then who that audience is, you're cooking for that. Preparation comes on the side. So some people are, do we have to do this? Do we have to peel the potatoes? Why can't we just throw them in whole? Do we actually have to wash them? They will be boiled. Won't that kill all the bacteria? You know, like that. You know, so, you know, it just goes on. You know, potatoes just transform dirt anyway. So, you know, yeah, therefore mud pies, right? You know, kids know the essence.
Yes.
So it's. Yes, and so that's the thing, is that these things are there. So the things like the management, the social things, all these other points that Prabhupada points out, is that The Bhagavatam deals with all that, but it deals with all that as secondary to Krishna consciousness. So the primary thing is Krishna consciousness. Because if you want to know the details of that, then you look in these other scriptures. Here, Bhagavatam gives what is the connection. Like that. So that's the important element. Yes?
What you're talking about, this hearing about Krishna's form, this is not just, some people think this is just jnana yoga.
If that's jnana yoga, then not doing that only leaves you with karma yoga. If you want to, if you're going to categorize. Just engaging activities is karma yoga, engaging the intelligences and analyzing as jnana yoga. So how is it karma yoga is better than jnana yoga?
But it's not just jnana yoga because it's experiencing rasa.
No, do you understand the point? Is that they're saying it's jnana yoga, so to address that, we're saying if you're going to call this jnana yoga, studying the shastra, in other words, hearing and chanting about the shastra, then what else would you be doing? So anything else you'd be doing, we call that karma yoga. So then why is it karma yoga is better than jnana yoga? If you're going to bring in that element of the mixed devotional service, then why is one better than the other? Karma yoga culminates in jnana yoga anyway. So if that means so it's a naturally a more advanced position. It's dependent upon karma yoga. That's how you get there. But it's a result of karma yoga. So bhakti means engaging the intelligence in the Lord's service. So if you're doing that, then why would they call it jnana yoga? Just because you're analyzing, they call it jnana yoga. What does that mean? What's the basis of what they're saying?
Because you're not actually doing anything.
So sitting around saying that you're not doing anything is not doing anything either. So isn't that jnana?
Yeah.
You know? So what does that mean, not doing anything? So that means unless you're physically engaged, you're not doing something? So the gopis remembering Krishna is doing nothing?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's actually a process of devotional service.
It is, yes. So that's the whole thing. Is one has to be very careful. That's why we go through this, so we can tell the difference. One has to know, that's why Gita gives, what is karma yoga, what's jnana yoga, what's jnana yoga, and then how those three are combined is buddhi yoga.
But there's a difference between like studying the Vedas and listening to Krishna's pastimes and getting the taste from that.
Not necessarily. No. This depends upon the what position you're dealing with it from. Because the Veda is only describing the same thing. It's just not as a direct.
Mark?
Yes.
The first chapter of the first Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Thakur, is a summary where he outlines this, essentially what the six questions were about.
Oh, okay.
So it's a little longer than the others.
Okay.
It's still there.
Okay.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
jai.
Jayatai Gaurav Prabhupada.